Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and Carl Carlson's online. Hey, Carl.
Hey, Fred.
You know, Carl, we're recording this before our last episode went out, which was on design for reliability and needing the long-term view to be successful with that. I'm still expecting an onslaught of comments and challenges from that. So I'm going to just reiterate that from our last episode real quick. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't listen to that one, I think it's one that will resonate with most of our listeners. I think we're all facing this challenge. You know, and one of the hard parts, we didn't mention it last time, is that once you get a good program going and everything's going well and warranty costs are low, surprises are low and everything else, somebody's going to look at you and go, so what good are you? What do you do? You know, mm-hmm. The waters are calm. Why do we need somebody looking at reliability?
I've often thought reliability engineers, and particularly reliability managers, often do themselves out of a job if they do a really good job. They don't need that ongoing effort to be the same level.
You know, and that might be part of why you see reliability engineers and departments moved around organizations. It's sort of like mm-hmm. a hot potato, is from my point of view. It's like, who has to bear the brunt of this group? I wonder if we're that annoying. But it brings up the question, though, and this is one that I've seen in one of the forums that on Ascendo, one of the questions came up was, well, we want to build a new reliability program. Where should we be located? And I think the question was, what department should we be in? So is that, I mean, it's just related to, where do you have the most effect? Where is it in implementing DFR over the long view kind of thing from our last episode? Brings up a lot of those topics. Is that, you got some ideas on that one?
I do. I've experienced managing a reliability group in a number of different larger silos or departments. And so but just kind of set the table. Forget about which department it is for a minute and talk about what criteria you want. And what you want is to be in an organization that will support reliability, as we talked about in a previous episode, the long view. Mm-hmm. And because in some organizations or some divisions or departments, the focus will be on the near term, and it needs to be. There are certain areas that need to focus on fixing problems. It's absolutely essential. And if reliability gets put in that department, the resources are going to migrate by natural law. They're going to migrate towards fixing problems.
Well, I'm thinking of the field service type groups, teams that are looking at what's coming back from the field and things get escalated and need to be resolved in order to maintain the product in the field today. And those are urgent. Those are today problems. And especially yes. when they're the tip of a much larger program, and you can alter the manufacturing process to make a fix or a small design change to implement avert a bigger problem. Those are urgent. And you're exactly right. Now, I've heard the argument, though, that that's a great place for reliability folks to be because they see what's really going wrong. They understand the customer better. And how is the product being used? Oh,
I would say that's a great place for them to spend some time to see what the problems are, what they interact with the customer, interact with the field, people interact with the manufacturing environment. So they have that knowledge and then bring that knowledge up front at a different time. What I'm talking about is, let's say there's one person in the reliability department, reliability group. And that person is responsible for fixing crises and for implementing long-term reliability tasks. Mm.
So they span it from the R&D guys to saying, hey, we got this new widget. Can you see if it's durable enough?
Yeah. And it's can a complete you come over and help us with the analyses and stuff like
it's a complete experiment. You know, it's all future work and long-term studies. And then in the other one is the customer's calling and I have to fly out to Toledo this afternoon.
Yeah. Or they've got, the plant's shut down or we got, where are they going to put their time?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is obvious. They're going to put their time wherever the urgency is.
They're going to work on what's fun. No, you're right. The boss is saying, here's your ticket, get going.
So I've seen a lot of groups try to span the same people from reliability and design to reliability assurance to reliability fixing problems or root cause analysis of problems.
Well, that's kind of the big spectrum, though. That's one end of the organization to another. And from daily urgency, hopefully not daily, but major emergency, all hands on deck kind of stuff, to the ivory tower do research end, right? There's also groups that you put the manufacturing organizations and operations organizations, I found, are just as likely as some other group to own warranty costs and to do the field repairs and servicing, but they pay the warranty out of their budget, in which I always found it as a disconnect because there's no way they can make the product more reliable. You know, if they already have a decent manufacturing process, if they're not making it much worse in their manufacturing process, they can't make it better.
Right.
Where I've seen then operations managers hire reliability engineers and locate them in the design team. Mm-hmm. Right. But they still have a boss in operations. And so they understand manufacturing variability, supply chain. They're close. They've got a toe back into the customer feedback part, but their primary job is in the design team. And so there's also shorter jumps that then I say, the priority is my marching orders are work with the design team, but weekly come back and talk to us.
I've really two thoughts on this. Where do you put reliability? One is organizational, and I'll talk about that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
The other is it can be anywhere as long as the reliability group is allowed and given, to use that phrase, air cover, to work on the longer term initiatives. And then it can work anywhere. But if they're not, then it doesn't.
I would add that it's not just air cover and, permission, commitment from senior managers or a mentor or the long-term view. I think it's also where they have the individuals themselves, wherever they have, also need to have influence. They have to have that credibility and the ability to communicate well and articulate value, connect to the things that are important to the teams they're trying to influence. So I've seen it work where an individual or a group is located virtually anywhere in the organization and they're exceedingly effective. But I think they could land anywhere and they would be effective.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're in a group that says, no, work on this today, work on this today, and it's always short-term and urgent, then even if you are very credible and have great skills individually, I think you need both, is what I'm trying to say.
It is a both. I agree, it's a both. You need the soft skills to be able to influence people, as well as the hard skills of what the engineering knowledge is and the reliability engineering knowledge. I don't think you can do one or the other, particularly when you're working up front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the things that's a challenge, two things. One is I saw in many, many assessments that the organizations that it doesn't matter where reliability sits, where the person that self-declares or is identified as the reliability person or the reliability group. I've seen centralized groups in the R&D group that are just abysmal. Others sit in quality and they're phenomenal and vice versa. So And I've seen organizations that have no identifiable reliability professional. Nobody carries it on their business card. Mm-hmm. Yet enough people in the organization carry those tools and processes and techniques, and it's built into their life cycle, their development cycle, that they don't need an identifiable reliability person because it really is baked into the organization. And those have done exceedingly well. And likewise, some I'll do lip service and fall apart. So it's, I don't think it's where they're located. I think it's more that the soft skills and the technical skills building a virtuous cycle of credibility and influence.
Yeah, and there's what you can do with the soft skills and the credibility and the influence from the bottom, in mm-hmm. other words, the engineer level, and the other leg of the triangle. I'm just going to talk about a triangle for a minute. So let's say one leg is those soft and hard skills of reliability, good influence, good techniques. Another leg is good management that's supportive, provides the budget that you need, provides the support to be working on those activities, doesn't try to take people that are in the middle of long-term projects and then send them out to fight the fires so they can't finish what they're working on.
Right.
And then a third leg, I do think there is value in understanding the different organizational structures. I prefer, where I've seen reliability work best is in engineering departments as opposed to pure quality departments.
Right.
By quality, I don't mean design for quality. I mean the quality that's working on root causing and fixing and that type of thing. So I think there's some advantage there.
Yeah, the quality groups often have the mantle of customer satisfaction, of making sure we adhere to the specifications. And, you know, they span a number of different things, but they're not the designers. They're kind of use that old image, the white lab coat with the clipboard at the end of the line saying good and bad.
Right.
Too many of them get pulled into that role as opposed to coaches and mentors where they have more influence.
Yes. And so if you lump quality and reliability together, oftentimes quality can become the umbrella and you end up focusing on the checking rather than on the design for.
Mm-hmm,
now that's not 100% true. I've seen some very good quality organizations that separate out design for quality and give people the time and the energy and support and resources to work on the longer term tasks, DFSS and what have you. And then they have other people that work on the firefighting and the checking, this type of thing. So it can work, but you have to have enlightened management for that to work. I've also seen it work very well in engineering groups. In other words, you have your director of engineering and you have your chassis engineering or whatever engineering in the vehicle business or however you design it, the organization, but you also have a reliability group. I've also seen reliability underneath validation, but then what happens is you end up with a lot of reliability assurance.
Right, yeah.
And reliability testing and calculating and statistics.
And it's way late in the program, so it's hard to make any significant changes unless it's a major disaster. Yeah. Yeah, you know, one of the best reliability he was a technical marketing manager. That was his business card. That's not where you expect to find the hallmark of reliability engineering influence. Yet Phil fully understood the importance of reliability for their product in their marketplace. He lived that. He heard from customers directly. He studied it. He knew that inherently, if we made a reliable product, it would benefit our customers and our organization. And so what he did is he was part of a product development team. He sat at the table with the mechanical and software and electrical engineers and so on and all the other folks around the table. And he was part of that discussion from near the start. And as the first prototype started to take shape, he went around to all these different groups, the subsets of the product, and said, well, how reliable is it? What's your estimate of its reliability today?
Mm-hmm.
And he made a very simple series system reliability block diagram. And he went to the next meeting and said, here's the estimate of where we are today. here's where it should be for us to meet our objectives for warranty costs, for customer satisfaction, and so on, there's a gap. And so he just presented the data, right? And the program manager, I forget her name, but she looked at him, and it was at the time when Weakest Link, I don't remember what the show was, but they'd point at somebody and say, you're the weakest link, you're out of here. She looked at, it was the power supply subsystem was dragging, was the weakest, the least reliable element of the product. And so she looked at the electrical engineer manager for the power supply and said, you're the weakest link. Come back next week with three options of how to improve the reliability of your system, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she was brilliant. And so Phil just kept every week would poll the group. And as it got more intense and who was making improvements and not the weakest link anymore, the accuracy or the sophistication of their estimates and requirements for predictions and all these other pieces just kept improving and getting more and more accurate and more sophisticated. And what the team did is they recognized if the power supply is not better, nothing we do is going to make any difference because it's going to fail before our product has a chance to fail. So it's, I'm not going to make mine better. Let's divert resources to the area that actually improves the system. And the program manager was able to orchestrate this. We're all in this together, guys. You know, let's make it work. But it started because somebody recognized it's important. Let's just create a way to measure it.
Excellent. A great story. Very good. And it's almost like systems engineering where you don't want to sub-optimize a design, and you need to, I mean, designs are made up of a lot of different areas that have to contribute. And if one of them is in trouble, your area is going to also be in trouble. In other words, you can't, the overall system isn't going to work if one area is in trouble. So that's a good story of how to highlight that. And in that case, the person doesn't have to be the super duper expert in reliability techniques.
No. And that's where, I mean, it illustrates an opportunity for reliability engineers. We don't have to do the PhD studies and create massive testing algorithms and do very complex, sophisticated material studies and stuff like that. Oftentimes we just have to allow our teams to recognize the discussions they need to have. And it can be very, very simple. And yes, having technical skills and having the ability to do detailed failure analysis and to model systems and interactions and things like that, that all can be very, very important. Yet the basics of illustrating how the systems interact to create a reliable system at the end of the day often takes just a simple illustration of here's the estimates today.
Yeah.
And our actions are get better estimates or improve them.
Part of this is visibility. One of the values, and there weren't a whole lot, but there were some values in the lean engineering approach.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the values was making it visible.
Right.
If you're in a fire drill fixing problems, it's very visible. If you're upfront trying to do the early actions and tasks, put those in place, sometimes it's not as visible. So I think we need to make it more visible. This is the value of the reliability plan.
Yeah.
Because the plan tasks can become visible. You can start acknowledging when they're done, and they're very upfront.
Yeah, I thought one of the problem areas with making things visible is if you only make the potential risks or only the failures or the weaknesses visible. It's got to come with solutions. It's got to, like the reliability plan talks about, well, how do we identify and prioritize risks? Now we're talking about failures, but we're doing something about it, right? Or halt testing or design for reliability stuff or proactive, positive things we can do. Whereas if you only walk in saying, hey, this failed, you need to fix it, they're going to kick you out of the room.
They're going to kick you out. And as you've said, Fred, the It's important to know what decisions need to be made and to help people make the right decisions mm-hmm. concerning reliability. And this is where the reliability engineer needs to be a teacher, needs to be a little bit of sales, needs to certainly have those soft skills to help to get the credibility and gain the confidence of the design team to help them make the right decisions at the right point in time so that you improve the inherent reliability.
Yeah. And then we'll go back to our last episode is then if it works or when it, I should say when it works and you get a more reliable, robust product or less problems or you ship on time, things like that, is make sure you catalog and capture how much those reliability activities made a difference. How much money mm-hmm. did it save you or make you? And keep track of that. That comes in handy as you continue to build out this portfolio of, hey, this reliability thing actually makes a difference.
That's money in the bank.
That's right. So I don't know. I'm just thinking of is if listeners, if you agree with this, if you have a favorite place you'd like to work from, or if you see what we're looking at is it's more of a, it doesn't matter where you are. It's a matter of how you do it and how it gets incorporated into an organization. That makes the big differences to create a reliable culture, a reliability engineering culture. Let us know. Head over to reliability.fm, and we'd love to hear from you how it's working or how it's going for your organization. Or if you're running into problems, if you're seeing roadblocks or barriers, either structural things that are going on or self-limiting things that are going on because of the dynamics. Let us know. We'd like to chat about those and understand them, but also maybe come up with some ideas or suggestions of how to get through some of the situations we can all find ourselves in at one point or another. But yeah, I'm hesitating, Carl, because I'm thinking about 15 other things we could continue to talk about.
There's a lot of spinoffs on this in terms of how to maximize the opportunities to achieve reliability. And it's just a great topic. Location is one thing. The soft skills is another. The like you said, working from the bottom up, so to speak, where you influence people is important. So just a really interesting topic.
It is. Yeah. You know, if you had your druthers of where in the world you would be located to do reliability engineering, do you have a preference? If it was independent of the company and if the team was already there that you needed to interact with or whatever, where would you want to work? Where would be your ideal spot?
Yeah, for personally myself, and of course you may be asking the readers or the listeners as well, mm-hmm. but for myself, if I'm working on reliability in design, I want to be underneath the product engineering group. And so that I maximize the networking with product engineering. Mm-hmm. Same thing if I'm working on reliability in manufacturing, I want to be close to that manufacturing group. So I like to be in the engineering activity, but that's a personal.
Well, I think you missed my question, though, is where in the organization's one question. But mm-hmm. I'm thinking geography-wise, would you want to be in Detroit or in Atlanta or in the Bahamas or in Fiji or...
Oh, okay.
And I suspect you've talked about, you know, traveling and seeing your kids and grandkids and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So you might go with what I've heard about CEOs is they move when a company's headquarters move is often closer to the CEO's home. So you might move closer to where your center of mass of your grandkids are.
Indeed. Right. Work for your home office and travel.
That's right. There's ways to do that. But it's oftentimes we don't, unless you're the CEO and have the option to move your headquarters, you might not have that luxury of living and working where you physically want to, where it makes most sense for you personally. But within an organization, we have our preferences, but we also have to be credible and have influence and make a difference. And then those opportunities become more available.
I have heard discussions and realities, not just discussions, where reliability engineers are have an opportunity sometimes to work from home. Mm-hmm. I just had a teleconference with someone the other day who was working from his home that day as a reliability engineer. Mm-hmm. And I'd be very curious as to how often that's happening. And because we've talked about the importance of networking and creating those relationships and influencing people, which is harder to do when you're at home. And so I know some companies try to bring people together to get that dynamic.
Yeah, that might be. I'm looking at the time. That's certainly going to be another topic because I agree with you. There's pieces to that we can explore. All right. Well, let's wrap this one up. And once again, if you've got insights into where reliability groups should be or should be located, or challenges in particular, let us know over at reliability.fm. We'd love to hear from you. So thanks, Carl. I think it's another one of those areas we certainly agree on, but I think we brought out a number of good points that hopefully can help other folks.
Thanks, Fred.
Hi, this is Adam Barrett of Apex Ridge Reliability. Apex Ridge Reliability is an engineering consulting service that advances your product development with reliability tools, methods, cultural practices, and education to ensure you create mature and reliable products. To learn more, go to ascendoreliability.com/go/apex.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.